First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
More details are uncovered in the attempted sale of JEA to Florida Power and Light. Getting to the bottom of it. Good Thursday morning. I think it's Thursday. What a week it's been. We're live in Studio 5 this morning. I'm Jamie Jackson in today for Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect right here on WJCT News 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. Just ahead, have you noticed that gas prices have come down? I noticed it yesterday and was actually quite shocked and thankful for it. We're checking in with AAA for more on that and everything you need to know before you head out of town for the holiday. And also, we're talking my favorite subject, food. Yeah, holiday weekend food. Lots of folks are going to be out barbecuing, of course, eating, and we're going to talk to Edible to get some great tips to make those meals extra special this weekend. But first this hour, last year, the Florida Times Union's Nate Monroe broke the news that JEA could be privatized. And since then, he's uncovered more secrecy. He's learned that he actually was a victim of surveillance and secured an interview with Florida Power and Light Chief Executive Eric Szilagyi. Now, in his latest column published on Tuesday, Nate shares the details of his investigation. And as always, I want you a part of the conversation. What are your thoughts on JEA? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. You can also send me a tweet on Twitter, the tweets at Jamie Radio News, J-A-M-I-E Radio News as well, to join in. And always, you can post on the First Coast Connect Facebook page as well. Well, joining me on the phone right now is Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union. Good morning, Nate. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jamie. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I have to tell you, this, you continue to do phenomenal work on this, and I appreciate you bringing this to the light. You know, there's a saying in the Bible, what's done in the dark is brought to the light, and there's been a lot of stuff done in the dark. I want to talk to you about, first of all, I'm shocked to hear that you yourself were a victim of surveillance, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Talk about that, because I think people are shocked to hear that, and you're just trying to do your job as a journalist. Talk about that.
Sure. So, you know, it's a little bit of a complicated story. The very short version is that we had obtained records in the last few weeks from a political consulting firm that worked with Florida Power and Light on JEA-related issues, including the privatization campaign a few years ago. And some of those records indicate that this consulting firm is in possession of documents indicating that I was under surveillance. So there is a surreptitious photo of my wife and I walking our dog.
Wow.
Just a few hundred feet from the front door of our apartment that we had been living at the time. There was a 72-page sort of dossier of information on me, including my unredacted social security number and a bunch of other stuff. This goes far beyond the kind of thing you could find in a Google search or even in a pretty sophisticated like database download on somebody. There is an indication that I was being watched when my wife and I were in Pensacola for a wedding. There is some communication between a political consultant and a Florida Power and Light vice president noting that I was hopping into an Uber after this wedding, which is particularly wild. I actually have a corresponding Uber receipt from the day and kind of rough time of this conversation, this text conversation. So, I mean, there were some pretty, like, candidly shocking details in these records. And, you know, between the political consulting firm and some former employees of that firm and Florida Power and Light, there is this little bit of a game of hot potato over sort of who is responsible for having had this done. But there is no question it was done.
How did it make you feel?
Yeah, I think that listeners can probably imagine that this was definitely surreal. The way this has happened, both our newspaper and the Orlando Sentinel since last year have been receiving anonymous batches of internal records from this consulting firm. And a few weeks ago, I had myself gotten an anonymous delivery of records, and I opened them with some sense of what they were going to be about, thinking, okay, this will be really good. This is, you know, maybe some FPL, JEA stuff. You know, and there, lo and behold, is some information about me. So, yeah, I mean, it was surreal. It felt, you know, violating. It's certainly, I think, on a bigger level, it's troubling behavior. It's very odd to be following a reporter. I'm not even sure I can fully understand what strategic interest this would have served. But, you know, definitely bizarre.
Now, do you think even now you're still under surveillance?
If I am, you know, my wife and I had a baby 2 months ago. So if they're watching me, they found me pretty boring a few years ago. I think they'd be really, really disappointed today. Yeah. So I would pity somebody who had to be surveilling our house.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, you published your latest column on Tuesday, where you continue to share the details of your investigation. For those who are listening that may not even be very familiar with everything, how could you summarize kind of the story behind what happened with the attempted sale of JEA, and why should people care, and what are the updates?
Sure. Yeah, so a few years ago, the JEA board of directors hired a young, inexperienced man to lead the agency as its CEO. His name was Aaron Zahn. And Zahn beat out far more qualified candidates for the CEO position. It seemed apparent at the time, and I think that the intervening years and a lot of reporting and investigations by others over the years have made it clear that the mayor's backing of this candidate, of Aaron Zahn, was this crucial piece of was a crucial advantage that he had over these other candidates. You know, the JEA board members who hire the CEO are appointed by the mayor, so it's a political position in some respects. He gets into JEA and fairly quickly starts about the effort to sell the agency. Now, he does not disclose that that's what he's doing, and at various points in time, at various points in time, takes great umbrage at the suggestion that he was interested in privatizing the agency. But come the summer of 2019, he formally actually starts a competitive solicitation process for bidders to come in and buy JEA. Florida Power and Light, the largest utility in Florida, and its parent company is the largest power company in the United States, you know, reasonably viewed as the top dog sort of bidder. They own all of the surrounding service territory in Jacksonville. So JEA has kind of long been the hole in their donut. And so, you know, FPL has been interested in buying JEA for a long time. The sale campaign ends up getting canceled amid lots of scandal, including most notably the revelation that Zahn, the CEO, crafted a bonus plan that was set to pay himself and his fellow executives millions and millions of dollars if they had consummated a sale successfully. He actually ends up getting indicted on conspiracy and wire fraud charges along with his CFO earlier this year for that plan. Both men have pleaded not guilty, and he has maintained now for years that he has done nothing wrong. That plan, he never did get paid out, and privatization was canceled. But the federal prosecutors believe that this went far enough to constitute criminal behavior. In their indictment, prosecutors include an interesting note. It's not something that's central to the criminal case against Zahn, but they note that in the days before Zahn disclosed that he was about to put the utility up for sale, so during a time in which he was trying to keep all of this secret, he met with the CEO of a potential bidder in West Palm Beach, Florida, and told them that JEA would be up for sale. It's kind of a one-off fact listed in the indictment. The unnamed potential bidder is not accused of any wrongdoing, but it's an interesting detail from the indictment, and it certainly was not known at the time. And had it been known at the time that Zahn was meeting with bidders, or meeting with one bidder and disclosing to them this before he had told the public or even had gotten the board's permission to do it, this would have been quite a story at the time. So the natural question is, who is the bidder, right? Florida Power and Light is based in Palm Beach. And so that seems to be at least some link that you can draw to Florida Power and Light. When the indictment came out in March of this year, I had asked Florida Power and Light about the description of this company, and they never responded to me. So a couple of weeks ago, when Eric Szilagyi was coming in for an interview to talk about the surveillance records, I wanted to be sure to get in this question about the company listed in the indictment. As he was for, I think, a lot of different topics that we touched on throughout this interview, he didn't quite say that this was Florida Power and Light, but he also didn't say it wasn't Florida Power and Light. So he, at one point, and I'm paraphrasing, but said, well, that could be us. I think that'd be us, but maybe it's not us. And I just found that to be a very curious response to this question. I mean, Florida Power and Light is fiercely protective of its reputation. They very closely monitor news coverage about their company. I and other reporters who have written about Florida Power and Light over the years have heard from Florida Power and Light when they are not happy or when they think something is wrong. It is implausible to me that the company was not well aware of this line in the indictment. It's implausible to me that Eric Szilagyi, as he sort of said in the interview, he'd need to go check his calendar to see if that's when he met. I think that would, it just struck me as implausible. Here we are.
Yeah.
We still don't necessarily know who this mystery bidder was.
Wow, there's a lot going on. We want to remind everyone, this is First Coast Connect right here on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Jamie Jackson, and we're talking with Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union. He's sharing what he's continued to uncover in his investigation. You may remember he's the one that broke the news that JEA could be privatized, and he's sharing with us how he was followed, how he went through this whole issue with surveillance, taking photos of him, his personal information, social security number, all of that, as a result of the work that he's been doing simply as a journalist. And, you know, JEA's been in the news quite a bit lately. One of the reasons being, have you looked at your bill lately? The bills are just crazy. News for Jax did a story yesterday, and they talked about how inflation's hitting everyone, but JEA is really, really charging a lot. In fact, a lot of people have been noticing the employee or the fuel charge has more than doubled from May to June. And in fact, there is also a proposal, City Council's vote set to vote in September, that JEA wants to do another fuel rate hike of 17% to cover the cost of natural gas. What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. We have a couple of people that have been reaching out. We have a Facebook post from JP Franks, who says, Florida Power and Light's actions in Jacksonville with the sale of JEA and the surveillance of journalists is one more egregious action on top of the manipulation of state elections. FPL is out of control, but are they also above the law? That's from JP Franks. Franks, yeah, I said that correctly. Nate, your thoughts on what JP had to share?
You know, I think that he's alluding to some separate controversy that the Orlando Sentinel has really done a great job covering that stems from the same sort of political consulting firm and these internal records about whether Florida Power and Light money was used to prop up spoiler candidates in some state Senate races in 2020. There was an effort to use these kind of dummy candidates to hurt the Democratic candidates for office and help Republicans retain control of the state Senate. Some of these records indicate that Florida Power and Light was involved in this, what the Sentinel has been calling the ghost candidate scandal. Yeah, I mean, Florida Power and Light has not had the best run of PR in the past year. The listener mentioned something about the law, and I do want to be clear about something. What we know about this surveillance issue is limited. We don't know everything, and there are more records within this firm's possession that we simply don't have. It can be legal in certain circumstances to follow and surveil people. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. We just simply don't know enough about what happened and why to really suss out, you know, there's a sort of legal side of it. And I should reiterate, too, that although this was Florida Power and Light's former consultant possessing these records, Florida Power and Light does claim that they did not authorize activity like this. They would never authorize activity like this. They were unaware of it until we came to them. So I do want to make sure I am clear on those points.
Now, what lies ahead for the work that you're doing in terms of continuing investigating this, continuing to uncover more and more details?
Sure. So we do have more records that we haven't written about yet from this consulting firm that are JEA related. And we need to do some work corroborating and verifying those records to make sure they are what they appear to be and to make sure that the information in there is good. And so we'll probably be writing about that over the coming weeks. I think the natural follow-up story that everyone will be covering is this federal case against the former CEO and CFO of JEA. We could, as we already have, learn more about the privatization process that we did not know about before. As I said, this issue about who the mystery bidder was not something that we knew about until the indictments came out. So I have no doubt that there is quite a bit more to learn about what happened.
Certainly. That is certainly true. Again, we want to invite folks to call in 549-2937, 549-2937. Now, Nate, as you continue to work on this, why should people at home care about all of this?
Well, I mean, people should care about this for the reasons you were just noting a few minutes ago. Utility bills are, for some people, the highest monthly cost that they pay, aside from their mortgage or their rent. This is the source of our clean water and our electricity and our ability to flush the toilet. This is as an essential service as essential gets. So who controls those services is, you know, really the heart of this privatization matter. Right now, local decision makers have control of rates. If a private company buys JEA, the Public Service Commission in Tallahassee gets to say what the rates are. So it's, I mean, it's the difference between, you know, a local, you know, mayor and council appointed people making this call or people in Tallahassee appointed by the governor. If people are displeased with their fuel charges, you can go lobby your council member. You can go to a, to the JEA board meeting in downtown and voice your concerns about that. That dynamic is very different if we're owned by a private company. And so, you know, this is a real pocketbook issue.
Well, and especially, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of people are talking about the massive amount of money that their bills have gone up just even recently. So it's been very interesting. We recently got something in from Patrick Puttick, who asks, what has been the mayor's extended role in this?
That's a good question. The mayor has never been accused by prosecutors of any wrongdoing. His name does not appear in the indictment. He does not appear unnamed in the indictment. Mm-hmm. But as I alluded to earlier, there is little question that the mayor, I think, supported the general concept of privatization. He supported the installment of a CEO who very deliberately began this privatization campaign. And the mayor, when the CEO was ousted for a brief time, stepped into the CEO shoes to try to finish this privatization campaign. And so at least on that level, I mean, he was involved and he supported the effort. There is not any evidence that I've seen or that I'm aware anyone else has seen that he was aware of this bonus scheme, the thing that's gotten the CEO in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But on the broader issue, he was involved, and it's also worth mentioning that his world, some of his friends and people who have helped him in political campaigns over the years have ties to Florida Power and Light. And this was an issue throughout the privatization campaign as well, that it seemed like FP&L, it just seemed like FP&L was the advantaged bidder throughout this process. Mm-hmm. That's the way it looked to a lot of people. And part of the reason was, you know, Florida Power and Light's got some extensive ties here, including to the mayor's office. And so, I think that's a pretty broad kind of overview of the mayor's role in this.
Thank you for that. We have Karen McAllister with JEA Media Relations, who is on the line. Karen, welcome to the conversation. Thank you for calling in. Karen, are you there? All right. Okay. Can you hear us, Karen? Okay. Karen, if you could give us a call back. We just got a call in from Karen McAllister with JEA Media Relations. And Karen, if you could give us a call back, because we would love to hear from you. She wanted to provide a correction on the rate increases. We did get a Facebook post from Hope, who asked, how do we hold Mayor Curry accountable for engineering this? In her words.
You know,
in her words.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, the mayor is term limited, so voters won't have a chance to hold him accountable for this in any sort of reelection campaign. And I don't know if he plans on running for future office, at least in the near future. So, you know, look, I mean, it's a good question, right? The mayor does like to make endorsements in local races. And so if this is the kind of thing that makes you motivated enough to want to vote against someone, then, you know, pay attention to his endorsements, pay attention to, who his backers are supporting in some of these local races. You know, that's certainly one way to do it.
All right. Well, Nate, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this morning and for sharing, even publicly in your article, what you've gone through and the work that you continue to do. And I know that you'll continue to uncover more and more information. You've made a lot of important and valid points here, and we look forward to seeing what more you continue to uncover. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, well, we've got much more still ahead. Up next, have you started filling up for 4th of July travel? You might be a little surprised at the pump, and it could be good news. We'll tell you why. Stay with us. This is First Coast Connect. You're listening to First Coast Connect right here on WJCT News 89.9 in Jacksonville. I'm Jamie Jackson in this morning for Melissa Ross. Now, as I mentioned, we did get a phone call from Karen McAllister, the media relations manager for JEA, and she wanted to provide this correction. She said the reference to a fuel hike is not accurate. JEA fuel rates are adjusted each month based on natural gas prices. City Council votes on JEA's budget in September, but the council does not determine our fuel costs. Now, she was making reference to, I was reading from the News for Jax story, which mentioned the talking about how more and more people are paying more on their bills, and she wanted to offer that correction. So, Karen, thank you for sending that to us, and we have now corrected it on the air. Well, have you been to the gas pump lately? I went to get some gas yesterday at Costco and noticed that I paid under $5 for premium for the first time in a long time. There was a 4 in the number. It was good and welcomed news. Gas prices have come down just in time for holiday travel, but there's a lot of great information that we need to be aware of and that we need to know as we get ready to head out of town for the holiday. Here to speak more about this is Mark Jenkins, a spokesman for AAA, the Auto Club Group. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I think that this is absolutely awesome that you all are doing a lot to make sure people are staying safe on the roads. One of the things that you all are working is to keep impaired drivers off the road during the weekend. Talk about that program.
Yeah, and that program's called Tow2Go, something that we've been offering since the late 90s, and one that's helped remove more than 25,000 impaired drivers from the roadway since the program's inception. And with Tow2Go, basically what we do is we will dispatch out a tow truck to transport the driver and the vehicle to a safe location within a 10-mile radius. It's all free of charge, and you don't have to be a AAA member to use it. Of course, now this is a service that we're providing an effort to try to make the road safer, right? I mean, you know, during the holiday weekend, a lot of folks are going to be partying, and unfortunately, some of them make the bad mistake of getting behind the wheel after they've been impaired. And we just want to be that last resort, that last line of defense, and keeping people from doing so. Of course, you know, we offer this program and reminding people and saying that this should be your last resort. You know, don't make this Tow2Go your priority or your primary way of getting home. We are really encouraging folks to make sure that they identify a designated driver, use a ride-sharing service. Just make sure that you're not driving impaired. But if you're in a tight situation and you need a ride, you can certainly call Tow2Go.
Now, what tips do you have for us as we get ready to head out on the road? So, I guess, you know, make sure that we're safe, but also, you know, a lot in terms of gas prices. Like I mentioned, we're seeing gas prices going down too.
You know, they've been going down here earlier this week. Unfortunately, we saw a little bit of a pop yesterday due to an uptick in the price of crude oil and wholesale gasoline futures. So in some areas, we're seeing prices going from $4.35 back up to around $4.50. But even still, I mean, it's not $5 a gallon for regular, which is, you know, obviously great news. But, I mean, if you're heading to the pump, you know, you should anticipate spending about $25 more to fill that tank compared to Independence Day last year. You know, the cost certainly adds up, but there are different ways that you can look to try to save some money. Obviously, whenever you're at the pump itself, pay very close attention because there are some retailers that will charge you more if you're using a credit card due to the fees associated with that. So pay with cash. You can look at different fuel reward programs out there. AAA does have one that can save you about 30 cents per gallon on your first fill up, 5 cents per gallon each additional fill up. And then just be really cautious with your driving. You know, if you're driving aggressively, slamming on the accelerator, that's going to reduce your fuel economy. And then lastly, and this speaks to a number of different things, but make sure your vehicle is properly maintained. Make sure it's ready for the road. And that helps with your fuel economy when you're talking about tire pressure and your air filter. But it's also about safety, you know? I mean, a lot of folks are taking a road trip this weekend, and AAA expects to respond to about 446,000 calls for roadside assistance during the holiday weekend, and that's for a number of different things, but the top three tend to be flat tire, dead battery, and lockout. And you could probably hit off two of those things just by a simple vehicle inspection and catch those issues before they pop up.
Now, we are definitely seeing more and more people at airports in terms of travel this year. In fact, a lot of places are going to be breaking records. I remember speaking to our local airport a couple of months ago, and they were anticipating a record number of travelers, at least in the air. What are you all expecting on the roads in terms of the number of people that are going to be out and about this weekend?
We're expecting a record number of people out on the roads for Independence Day. You know, and part of that is likely driven by some of the headaches that you're seeing with air travel. Mm. Another thing, too, is because expenses are so high, driving often offers a little more control over your expenses and the length of your trip. At the same time, a lot of folks are also looking more toward regional travel as a way to economize. So road trips are certainly going to be key this summer. And I would anticipate that the busiest travel times are going to be later this afternoon, Thursday afternoon, early evening, and Friday afternoon, early evening, when you're going to have that mix of both travelers, holiday commuters, but also the daily drivers, people who are returning home from work, all mixing together out there on the roadway. So if you are looking to beat the traffic, the best advice would be either to leave before noon on Thursday and Friday, or possibly traveling over the weekend.
And is there anything else that you feel we need to be armed with as we get ready to hit the roads or the skies or the trains or anywhere?
Well, I mean, you know, I think when talking about air travel specifically, we've seen a wave of cancellations and delays here as of late. And I think it's important for travelers, especially those who are planning a flight this week, to, you know, stock their carry-on bag with a change of clothes and their medications, because if your flight is canceled, you might not get that checked bag back for some time. So you want to ensure that you have a backup plan there. And if you're looking at a flight, either if you're looking at booking a flight later this summer, I mean, really take into consideration some of your options. First and foremost, I think it's important to book a flight early in the morning. That way it's less susceptible to cancellations and delays. When you're looking at booking a flight that has multiple connections, enable yourself a little extra time to get to that connecting flight. Don't just book something that's really tight together. And then consider travel insurance. There are different policies that speak directly to air travel where you could be reimbursed for a delay or any of those unexpected out-of-cost or out-of-pocket expenses that you would pay that you weren't planning on, say, for a flight cancellation. If you have to, for instance, purchase a hotel overnight, transportation, meals costs, those things could be reimbursed to you with the right travel insurance policy.
And real quick, I'm a AAA member. Is that insurance policy, is that part of a AAA membership? Do you all offer that?
That's something that we of course, will offer to travelers, but it's not included in the membership. It's okay. Something that you'll have to cherry pick a la carte based on the policy that's right for you.
Gotcha. Perfect. Thank you so much. Mark Jenkins, spokesman for AAA, the Auto Club Group, with very, very important information for all of us this travel season. Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. Have a great day.
Thank you. Coming up, we're talking fireworks, everything you need to know to view the different shows around Jacksonville. Stay with us. This is First Coast Connect right here on WJCT News 89.9. This is First Coast Connect right here on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Jamie Jackson. Welcome back. The city of Jacksonville will host its annual Independence Day fireworks displays all across the city. Now, while lots of folks are excited to see COVID cases low enough to resume the tradition, others are concerned about the safety of large crowds gathering and the environmental impacts of shooting off the fireworks during a particularly dry summer. Here to talk more is Chandler Fussell, Chief of Sports and Entertainment for the City of Jacksonville. Good morning, Chandler.
Good morning, Jamie. Thank you for having me.
Now, there are going to be celebrations all over the area. Can you talk about the different locations? There's seven locations, correct?
There's actually five locations this year.
Okay.
All good. They will be at downtown Jacksonville, FSCJ North Campus, the Avenues Mall, Trinity Baptist Church, and Ed Austin Regional Park.
And what can people expect this year?
So at the downtown location, that is our main location for the fireworks at Riverfront Plaza. We have a family fun zone presented by Kroger Delivery with giveaways, bounce houses, activities, food trucks, beverages, glow sticks. And then we have a concert that night presented by Miller Electric Company that will feature JHP Entertainment from 5 to 6:30 p.m., and then Brian Malpass will be on from 6:45 to 9:45 p.m., leading up to the fireworks that start at 9:45 p.m.
Now, what do you say to the people who are a little concerned about large gatherings and large groups with COVID?
Yeah, so we have a lot of space at Riverfront Plaza. It'll be very spread out. We have picnic tables around. We have a lot of grass area if you want to bring your blankets, chairs, anything like that. So there will be space down there if you want to spread out and you're not comfortable with the close location. It is a very big area. We can fit a lot of people down there. So we just hope people come out and enjoy the family fun that we have for them.
Now, there's going to be more opportunities, obviously, to view the fireworks because there's also going to be fireworks at 1-2-1 Financial Ballpark, right?
That is correct, yes, after their game.
All right. Tell us more about that.
So their game starts at 7:05 p.m. on July 4th, and they are planning to have the fireworks as soon as the game is over. So hopefully that is aligned with ours at 9:45. That would be great for everybody. But it is launching as soon as their game gets over on July 4th.
Now, for those who are looking to visit the various locations for fireworks, what tips do you have for those of us who plan on actually coming out?
Yeah, well, we hope everybody comes out at least to one site. We call them the remote sites. That would be the FSCJ North Campus, the Avenues, Trinity, or Ed Austin. Those will launch at 9:45 as well. You can show up at any time throughout the day. Grab a spot if you want to hang out, see the area, but they will launch at 9:45. There's no activations at these sites. I believe Trinity is planning their own activations with games and things like that. That is open to the public, but at the other sites, it is strictly just fireworks. So show up whenever you can, get a good spot.
Now, what music performers will be featured at Riverfront Plaza?
We have JHP Entertainment beginning at 5, and he is a DJ from 5 to 6:30. And then Brian Malpass will finish us out from 6:45 to 9:45. And he is kind of a classic country and rock and roll cover band. We had him out last year, and he was excellent. So we brought him back this year. The crowd loved it, so we're looking forward to another great show.
Now, for those who are concerned about the environmental impacts of shooting off fireworks during what we've seen so far to be a dry summer, what response do you have to those folks?
Yeah, we make sure we take all the precautions with our fireworks team. They do a great job of making sure it's a safe environment when they shoot them off. We're very cautious about the drop zones, about the safety zones around the footprint of the fireworks. And then we also will have crews cleaning up the fireworks as soon as the event ends at each of the locations. So we are very, you know, cautious of that. We're aware, and we want to make sure we do not pollute the environment or anything like that moving forward.
Now, I was talking with our team here yesterday about doing this story, and one of the things I was thinking about was the 4th of July. I remember it because it's my wedding anniversary, and it was pouring down, raining. So obviously, I can barely remember if we even went to go see fireworks, but in terms of crowds, obviously the year before, because of COVID, things were a lot different. Are you expecting large numbers this year?
We are. Ever since we've expanded the locations to multiple sites in 2020, we have really got a great response from the citizens of Jacksonville coming out and being at the shows. So we anticipate another big crowd this year. Obviously, rain and things like that can change that, but hopefully things look good right now. Even last year, it did rain earlier in the day some, but we still had great crowds at all the locations. So hopefully the weather's good and everybody can enjoy.
And finally, why should people come out?
Well, it's a great environment, you know, just to come out with your family, friends, enjoy the fireworks. Everyone loves fireworks. At downtown, you know, we have a concert. The Family Fun Zone is going to have some great giveaways, food trucks. Just come out and celebrate July 4th, and hopefully everyone in Jacksonville has a great time.
All right. Thank you so much, Chandler Fussell, Chief of Sports and Entertainment for the City of Jacksonville. Lots of great information. Real quick, where can we find all of those locations for the fireworks? Is there a website that we can go to?
Yes, you can visit our website. It is event.coj.net.
All right. Awesome. Chandler, thank you so much for joining me this morning. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate it.
All right. And we will be right back.
WJCT Public Media and the Florida Theater present Spirogyra, performing live at the WJCT Soundstage on Friday, July 1st, 2022 at 7:30 p.m. Visit jacksmusic.org/events for tickets.
Examining the role of the physician as citizen in our healthcare system. I'm Dr. Joe Servin. Join me Saturday at 4 for What's Health Got to Do with It, only on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville.
Lots of aid programs in this economy are means tested, so you got to prove you don't make enough money to qualify for them.
Some of the families you most want to reach through means tested programs are the ones who are going to struggle the most to document income, resources, or lack thereof.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, banking for benefits, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Thank you. The January 6th attack on the Capitol wasn't the end of the election denial movement. It was the beginning.
Our voice has gotten bigger and bigger every single day since last year, and you can't stop that.
An NPR investigation tracks the movements of conspiracy theorists as they traveled the country spreading lies. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starting at 4 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the Proud Boys and their role in the attack on the Capitol. They took the lead in removing police barricades and instigating breakthroughs in several locations. We'll talk with Alan Foyer, who covers extremism and political violence for the New York Times and helped analyze Proud Boys' court documents, text messages, and videos. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
President Biden and Vice President Harris say restoring the right to an abortion should be on the ballot in November. In California, it already is. Voters there will decide if the state's constitution should be amended to include that right. Next time on 1A, a closer look at the fight between the so-called originalists and those who think our founding documents need a change.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
And you're listening to First Coast Connect right here on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Jamie Jackson. Well, if you're like me and you love food, this weekend is definitely for you, right? We all love to eat during the 4th of July weekend, but there's some important things that you should think about and know as you try to take your meals to the next level. So we've asked Lauren Titus, editor-in-chief of Edible Northeast Florida, to join us with some tips on how we can make our meals this weekend extra special. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much. And excited to talk about all things food with you this morning. So
always.
The first question is, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers, kind of the tradition for the 4th of July. But what can we do to take things to the next level?
Well, I know there are purists out there who absolutely must have hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill and more power to them. Nothing against that. But if you are going to do that, look for really good quality local hamburgers and hot dogs. Some of the local butcher shops have some great deals on, you know, freshly ground beef. Stallmeyer is a great source of some great hot dogs. So there are definitely ways you can up your game just by serving hamburgers and hot dogs. If you want to go beyond that, however, and let's say you have some vegetarians at your gathering this weekend, how about grilling cauliflower steaks? Mm. We've got some great tips on how to really bring out the flavor of cauliflower on the grill, which is one of the vegetables you can cook on the grill very easily. You can do your whole meal on skewers with not a hamburger or a hot dog in sight, if that's the way you want to go. And it's a lot of fun. A lot of that can be prepped the day before, so all you have to do is fire up the grill and get your skewers out and gather around the grill and cook away. So there's definitely a lot of different ways you can bring your grilling game up to the next level.
Now, one of the things you mentioned in a great recipe that we're going to have available on our website for the grilled cauliflower steaks is it pronounced G-bad or a G-B-A-D?
So, what was the word? I didn't hear that.
G-bad, golden brown and delicious.
Oh, I'd say G-bad, yes.
And tell us, how do we achieve that? What's the best way to do that?
Well, one thing, you can marinate your cauliflower steak. Make sure you get the center part of the cauliflower in your cut, because that's going to help hold the cauliflower together when mm-hmm. you're grilling it and turning it. Don't be afraid to turn it once or twice to get the essence of whatever you're cooking with, whether it's gas or, you know, if you use some flavored wood chips. But just, you know, don't be afraid to turn even steaks. It's good to turn them when they're on the grill to help really get them cooked all the way through. Even if you like it rare or medium rare, you want to make sure that it's safe. Another fun vegetable to cook on the grill, and I know there are a lot of okra haters out there, but if you're hesitant to try okra on the grill, I hope to dissuade you of that, because it actually reduces the sliminess that some people find objectionable with okra, and you can, again, marinate it. Brush a little olive oil and garlic on it and throw it right on the grill and let it cook for a couple of minutes, rotating it a little bit. And it's just really, it still has a little bit of the crunch that you get when you eat it raw, but it also warms it up, softens it. It's a really great side dish for your 4th of July barbecue.
And finally, in our last 60 seconds, let's talk one of the best parts, dessert. This is something that the new issue focuses on. What are some great desserts that we can maybe do for the weekend?
Yeah, well, I am definitely a sweets person. from morning to night, I'm all for dessert. Fruit. Try grilling fruit. Peaches. Peaches are in season right now, and they are a delicious grilled fruit that you can serve either plain, or you can whip up some cream and drop a dollop of whipped cream on it, sprinkle with a little cinnamon, mix it up after you've grilled the peaches and put it on top of ice cream, of course. 4th of July ice cream is, they go hand in hand. And watermelon. If you haven't tried grilled watermelon, it's going to take your appreciation of watermelon to a new level. So fruit is definitely a fun thing, and you can even make fruit skewers and top them on pound cake and have a great, easy dessert as well.
All right. Lauren Titus, editor for Edible Northeast Florida. Make sure you pick up your copy. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Happy grilling.
Thank you. Well, to make your weekend even sweeter, we're giving away two pairs of tickets to the Joan Jett, Poison, Def Leppard, Motley Crue concert on Saturday at TIAA Bank Field. To enter, email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org with concert in the subject line. Winners will be selected at random and notified. That's going to be it for our show. Our senior producer is Heather Schatz. Catherine Hobbs is our associate producer. Our director this morning, Josh Torres. Our production intern is Marie Billow. Jessica Palumbo is our editorial director, and our news editor is Randy Roguski. If you have any questions or comments about the First Coast, make sure you email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Jamie Jackson, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Thanks for the company, and make it a positive day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.